Moore.
Here.
Debbie Berry.
Here.
Bruce Brinker.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Pledge of allegiance. Pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all. Minutes. Approval of the minutes.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Financial report, please, Bill.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you.
Morning.
While this is loading up, these are the numbers that are through November 30th this year. Thank you, David. Okay, jumping right in from a property tax perspective, we're right where we expected to be. We can see that we've had a great year for grants and donations. This has been driven by the final cash collections on Tiger, the SVOG opportunity and generous donations. Great work from our development team. They've really done excellent this year. And from the records I've seen, this is a record year for us on the grants and donation side. So outstanding work.
How much ahead, this is a record year. How much ahead of the next highest is this?
I want to say you're testing my memory a little bit on this one, but probably close to $9 million. It's significant.
Wow.
Really significant.
Congratulations.
Crossing the 20 million mark in the past.
It's a team effort. I mean, there are so many different
things. It's a significant difference in what's been going on. This is wonderful.
True. And it was a very strong last year when we hit the 14 number, but I think the best I saw was close to 17-ish. So really great job. Charges for services, we did cross over the 30 million mark for the year, continuing to do well. About $9 million more than 2020 at this point, which is consistent with where we were last month. And very similar to 2019 in total charges for services revenue, but we'll see that that's made up a little bit differently with zoo and golf versus enterprise. But in aggregate, very comparable. And then from a total revenue perspective, we're at about $141,300,000. And it's about $19 million over last year. Again, 12 of that is the restricted fund activity and about $16 million over 2019, which is also due to the restricted fund, predominantly the difference in restricted fund activity, the grants and donations. From a total operating expenditure position, we're about $6.9 million more than we were in 2020 and about $9 million less than 2019. This is a combination of factors. We haven't reached the 2019 spending levels because of the fact that we still are having challenges in the hiring market, supply chain issues, and general conservatism as we still try and figure out exactly where the pandemic is going to go and for how long. So overall, our operating surplus is currently at $55 million, about $12 million greater than 2020, and about $25 million greater than 2019. And you can see again, 17 of that is the restricted revenue and 8 million is less than operational expenditures. From a capital expense position, about 3.3 million less than last year in spend and roughly 6 million more than 2019. So the net surplus ends up being about 15.7 million greater than last year. But keep in mind, we're estimating about $17.5 million worth of encumbrances to roll into 2022. That's a pretty significant amount, but that speaks to some of the things we're just not able to purchase right now or have had to slow down due to supply chain or other concerns.
Bill, should we have those? Should there be some way to represent that on this document? Because it looks like we're a little better than we are.
We can absolutely build that in. If we want to show what we would consider open POs, month to month, it's a little bit tougher.
But at the end of the
but
year.
But at the end of the year, for sure. And when we do the financials in December, we can show exactly what that number will be because we'll have that final number that's rolling into the subsequent year. So we can see that. And we have that in our 10-year forecast. We can incorporate that as well. But absolutely, we can drop that in here to give an idea of what's rolling.
Right.
It's a good suggestion. Okay, and then so again, about 17 and a half million that we'll see rolling into 2022. Looking at the zoo, we are at 13.853 as of the end of November, but we have since crossed the 14 million mark in December, so a record year for the zoo, just outstanding. General admissions, the society membership, and in-park spending have all been up significantly for us. We're about $6 million ahead of 2020, which again is about the same as last month, and about $1.5 million ahead of 2019. also similar to the delta that we saw last month. Operating expenses about 1.6 million greater than 2020 and about 2.2 million less than 2019 for reasons mentioned before. And then from the operating subsidy position, we're about 4.4 million less in subsidy from 2020. That's down about 400,000 from last month and about 3.6 million less than 2019. We can see our unrestricted capital expenditures about 3.3 million less than 2020. Again, very consistent with what we saw in October, about 2.2 million less than 2019. So this puts our net subsidy currently at 4.1 million, which is about $7.7 million less than it was in 2020 and about 5.8 million less than it was in 2019. So good activity at the zoo. And again, just team's done a great job. What's interesting is the number of attendance guests or attendees is roughly 1.2 million or so, which is consistent with what we saw. Looking for Chris, I think he stepped out. Consistent with what we've seen in the last couple of years. So number of people attending has not changed wildly, but in-park spending and zoo memberships have really done a nice job for us in terms of the activity that we've seen. So it's great to see. More good news when we jump to golf. We're at 8.99 million at the end of November. We have crossed over or just under the 9 million mark. We're really close. I believe we crossed over in December, the 9 million mark. I need to confirm that, but again, a record year. Even in spite of the fact that our November and December weather hasn't been great, it's been a little bit wet and cool and windy. Revenue is about $583,000 over 2020. The rounds are down slightly, about 2%, but all of the other revenue lines, as you can see here, are contributing to the increase over 2020. Operating expenses are about $581,000 over 2020, offsetting the additional revenue. So this takes us to a net surplus position that's very, very close to where we were in 2020. You can see we're only $1,600 off, which is pretty remarkable. And then when we jump down to our net surplus position, we're at about $2 million, which is about $295,000 less than last year after capital, inclusive of the cart buyout that we did this year that we had deferred in 2020, which makes up the predominance of that $295,000 difference. On a course by course basis, pretty consistent with what we've seen in the past. We do have our 5 courses over a million. Sleepy has crossed over 1.8 million and Seneca is approaching 1.8 million. So on a per course basis, very, very strong. And all the courses are producing operating surplus this season.
Seneca's amazing.
Moving to enterprise. So enterprise is where we continue to do as much as we can with the resources we have. We're about $1.5 million. More revenue than 2020. We gained another 200,000 in November. Strong activity at Merwin's. We're about 2.4 million behind 2019, which is about a 36% decline for reasons we've talked about in prior meetings. So some closed locations, difficulty with staffing and things of that nature. Our operating expenses are about 813,000 greater than 2020, supporting that more activity this year versus last, but about 2.2 million less than 2019. Again, it makes sense given the decline in revenue from 19 to 21. Our operating subsidy, $693,000 less than 2020. So we're just under break even, and we actually have a good chance of reaching break even by the end of December if performance continues to be strong at Merwin's. We're about $254,000 more subsidy than we were in 2019, but that's down from $562,000 last month. So we're making good progress towards that relative comparison as well. And then from our net, we don't have a ton of capital activity coming through this year. So from a net position, net subsidy is $122,000, again, with a chance for the break-even mark this year, about a $762,000 improvement from 2020. When we look at our per location activity, there's not a whole lot here that's changed. We can see though that Merwin's is approaching the $1 million mark in revenue and trying to strive for getting to that break-even status as well. And likewise, as we move through our other locations, the chalet, as we mentioned, we have reduced hours and days. So we are not expecting it to perform at the same level that we've seen in prior years, but we are expecting that operating subsidy to become an operating surplus or at least break even. And with that, if there are no questions, that is where we stand through November.
Can I ask one question? Sure. Do we promote the chalet in any way to get people to rent it?
We do to rent it,
yeah,
as opposed to just don't attend.
I think big picture, when you look at this year from a staffing perspective, we're open as much as we can with the staff that we currently have. The facility is actually rentable in other times of the year, birthday parties and a whole host of things. So it's actually in our long-term capital look. The facility is reaching its end of its life expectancy. We're looking at adding potentially a sheet of ice to complement the winter activities down there going forward. So I think stay tuned for some new things coming there. Having said that, we do, you know, promote it as much as we can. Almost every time slot that is available is actually booked right now. If we had more staff, we could certainly provide more.
Yeah, so the staff is the issue.
Right now it is, correct.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
On that note, I'd like to give Bill a huge round of applause. This is his last board meeting. I think he's done with his team an absolutely fantastic job shepherding one of the pillars of Metro Parks is fiscal responsibility. And he has continued to uphold that for his 4.5+ years here. So again, I thank him and his entire team for their diligence in handling the complexity of what our budget and what our business units do for the Metro Park. So thank you again so much.
Great job.
We will move into action. Action items. The very first one was actually the swearing in of our chief prosecuting attorney. Unfortunately, she got called to court this morning. And so you're at the mercy of the court. So
you blew us off to go to work.
We very much appreciate her diligence in going to the courts this morning, but we look forward to recognizing Marisa Marinelli here in front of the board as our chief prosecuting attorney. So we look forward to that. The next action item we have is the 2021 budget adjustment number 12. Bill?
Thanks, Brian. Budget adjustment number 12 is for $2,020,125. About $1.2 million of this is the appropriation of existing restricted funds, $804,000 our new restricted funds, $48,000 our additional revenue. Main items that are flowing through this adjustment are about $410,000 for the truck purchases we've talked about at the last meeting, and our $784,000 in the primate exhibit design, and $675,000 for Garfield Pond. So the recommended action falls on the top of page 10, inclusive of where the detail can be found, pages 47 to 49 of this agenda.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is the 2022 appropriations budget. Bill?
The 2022 appropriations budget, the baseline budget is for $151,575,818. We have estimated carryover encumbrances of $17,505,544 for a total estimated spend in 2022 of $169,081,362. We covered these items largely in the preview that we did at the November board meeting. We do have several items that increased since then as we've tightened up some opportunities. We allocated $115,000 for a capital project at police headquarters, $143,000 for capital equipment for the zoo. And given the great activity at golf, we've allocated $1.6 million in capital projects for Manakiki, namely the pump station, the irrigation system, and the maintenance facility, all of which need some attention. We also increased, as we wrapped up our projection for 2021, our results by about $3 million for additional grant monies received and about $650,000 for additional revenues above what was previously estimated. We increased our encumbrances from $16 million to $17.5 million as supply chain and other factors have pushed some of those expected expenditures into 2022. So what this all ends up doing is coming down to a net increase in terms of cash to be used in 2022 of about $532,000. And we do assume that we will have all expenditures paid by the end of the year in 2022. It's a conservative approach. Although every year we typically have some that roll over, we still fully fund and fully support those expenditures. Also included in this action item for compliance purposes with our bylaws is the fixing of compensation, which is at the top of page 11 of the agenda, which considers the increases to minimum wage, cost of living, and market competitiveness concerns. So the recommended action is to approve the 2022 appropriations budget and the fixing of the compensation range, and that falls on the top of near the top of page 11 of the agenda.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next one is the authorization revision to the change fund and petty cash. I will not go through all of the revisions. It is lengthy. It's a rebalancing of the petty cash funds. It falls on the bottom portion of page 16.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the single source surplus declarations, auction approvals, declaration of surplus equipment, and sale to through GovDeals, permission for the live auction and single source purchase of used vehicles. This is something that we've been very successful through the last number of years, basically deploying all types of avenues to either sell our surplus goods, permission to use a live auction, which we've used very successfully, and actually then going out to purchase other used vehicles and equipment through other auctions. We've been able to buy the average age of our fleet down from 19 plus years down to well below 10. Now this year is going to be again challenging based on some of the vehicles and things that will be made available, but we'll continue to scour auctions and other items. We continue to look for the best value for the Park District to sell either through the internet auction or through the live auction. Recommended action falls on the bottom mid portion of page 18 to enter into the agreements.
Can I ask one question, Brian, on the live auction? Do you let the public know somehow?
Yes.
What's available, even for the stuff that's less than $10,000?
Yeah, there's a whole sale bill that goes out through an auctioneer, and the last time was probably 4 years ago, I'm guessing. Was it four? Four. And it was held at Rocky River, and it was a great opportunity to clean out a lot of the areas. It was actually very successful. The internet gives us a much wider, swath to get people to look at it. In fact, a few years ago, our tram went to North Dakota and actually became part of one of the campgrounds to serve Sturgis, so the big motorcycle rally. So when you sell on the internet, you can actually see more people throughout the country can bid on it. If it's a live auction, it's really more local. Having said that, the prices do fluctuate depending on what the vehicle is or what we have. So again, our teams have done a very diligent job of maximizing those items.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is the adoption of the 2022 bylaws.
Thank you, Brian. We're coming to you a month early. Typically, we do this in our organizational meeting in January, but finance has gone through a couple things and wanted us to be able to have these adopted this month so that they can implement January 1. So that is why we are here with you today looking at the bylaws. And so just to quickly go over the proposed changes, as we went through our RFPs for our legal services, which we will come to you in January to approve, we got rid of some legacy language in the bylaws, which talked about and referred to our general counsel. We haven't used that model for the last 11 years that we would have an attorney, sitting in every board meeting. We have saved money by using our internal legal staff to fill that role. So that language change in Article 1 reflects just that change to a more generic legal counsel is that we select in January. The second change that we have is in Article 3, the ethics program. And as you are all very familiar, because you also go through the annual ethics program, my recommendation at this time is to take it to an every other year review. We still in Northeast Ohio probably have the most robust ethics review program. We review conflicts of interest proactively to try to make sure that there are no conflicts of interest. And what we do is we have that questionnaire filled out in the fall, and then we try to navigate and provide that direction for the upcoming year. What we're finding is that the changes are not significant from year to year. And for all new employees who are hired, we vet their ethics and any potential conflicts at the time of their hire. So it's kind of overkill to do it every year. And then it'll allow our compliance department that really runs through all of the ethics, the conflicts, issues, and contracts a little bit more time to be very careful and thorough by doing it every other year. So that's what we're recommending, going from annual to every other.
Rose, do people sign currently? Do people sign every year?
So what we do, we've moved to a digital form, electronic, and so through the portal, the employees fill out the form and answer the ethics questions about potential conflicts. So in essence, yes, they're signing.
Okay, so this will change it to every other year.
Every other year, yeah. But still grabbing, and actually it's an ongoing process. If someone starts a business or if someone's spouse gets hired somewhere new, they report that, and so it's actually an ongoing process.
Mm-hmm. It triggers.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, yes. Yes, okay. And then the next change we have is in Article 4. What we've done here is make the change so that the CFO's salary would technically be part of the salaries that are set by the CEO. The Ohio law requires the board to appoint our CEO and CFO, but Ohio law does not speak to the issue of salary. And so we see that as more administratively appropriate. And going into Article 5, we have the issue regarding procurement of services in Section 2. Our finance department has reviewed other entities, other public entities, and the use of the pro card. We are recommending that it be moved from 1,000 to 5,000. This will help with our processes and efficiencies, as well as not create any exposure that we think that is inappropriate. And then finally, the change also in Article 5, and this is in Section 4, or Section 5, excuse me. We spoke to our change orders and our amendments of contracts. And what we did here was make it more transparent. We put some guardrails on our change orders, because under the existing language, the change orders could amount to a significant amount. But what we have added in this language is that if we get to a situation, a fact scenario, where we would have change orders that would exceed 50% of the original contract, we have to come back to the board to get your approval.
No stacking.
What's that?
No stacking.
That's right. That's right. And so, so that we feel is an appropriate measure and responsible measure, so that you, the board, always are aware of the change order as it gets to that significant amount. So those are the changes that we have proposed to you. Any questions, further questions?
No.
Okay.
Recommend action rules in the middle portion of page 19.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is a land acquisition from the West Creek Conservancy. This is known as the Pavia property. This is 2.7 acres in the West Creek Reservation. The board has seen many lease amendments come forward over the last dozen or so years. This is a great opportunity for, you'll have to go scroll up just a little bit, David. There we go. You can see these two very, very strategic pieces of property here. Been granted in accordance with the Chief Probate Judge of Cuyahoga County, Anthony J. Russo. Again, this is a partnership and purchase agreement with the West Creek Conservancy. We can see the ultimate goal of getting all the way up to Grantwood, parallel to the school that's currently there. We continue to add more acres into the West Creek Reservation. So if there are no questions, the recommended action falls on the top portion of page 20 to authorize the acquisition of the 2.7 acres from West Creek Conservancy.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the award of RFP 6608B Mastic Road Connector Trail Design Builder. This is in the Rocky River Reservation. This is a project that we're working on to continue to fulfill our mission of connecting people. This is an opportunity that has come forward through the build out of the actual bridge. And so we continue to, this is actually Solon. We're actually moving to the other side of town. But having said that, this is in Rocky River. This is actually allowing more residents access to the particular area. We did shortlist 3 firms. We came to the highest and best of Shermer Construction. They have done numerous projects for Cleveland Metro Parks over the last number of years. Sean, anything you'd like to add to this particular one?
Right now, what we're asking for is the approval to bring Shermer on board and also their designer, LJB. So the request is to authorize those funds. We'll then start design. We'll price different solutions. This is a challenging project because we are working on a hillside going uphill. Do want to make sure we recognize Cuyahoga County Department of Public Works, who has already invested in more than $1 million to extend the bridge deck. This is great partnership. This is great planning. This is how these things should work. And we're excited to be at this stage to take the next step to design our portion.
Where is this going to fit? I drive this area a lot, and the bridge is fantastic, and you can see the edges, and I just can't even envision how we're going to get a trail on the edge of the road that is very narrow and steep slope.
We are looking at several solutions. We're looking for the most economical, of course, but we might have to have some type of structure. There is a ravine. We might have to cantilever off just a bit.
Yeah.
There is a ravine on the north end of the bridge, but essentially it will fit on the south side of the road.
And it'll be completely separate from the road, like?
It will be completely separate from the road. The closest will be is actually when we connect to the bridge, and then we'll at a minimum get 5 feet away from the edge of curb.
Gotcha.
But there are some chances. There's actually a little tabletop worked into the hillside west of the bridge, and we might use that to our advantage.
Do you know the length of this connection and what you anticipate the cost could be for the ultimate project?
When we started the project, we were at about 1.1 million. So that's our estimate. We're really going to try and stick close to that. Now, since we initially did this and today, things have escalated a bit in terms of construction cost. We're just several hundred feet on each side. So this isn't a long project.
Okay.
But it is challenging.
It's a really great connection that's necessary, but wow, it's going to be an engineering wonder.
This is probably in the top three of the phone calls we get of, hey, when is this happening?
Needing this connection, right? Agreed, because you can't really ride on the road there either. So really good that you're going forward.
Yes.
Again, as the recommended action, I'd like to thank our grant funder, Ohio Department of Natural Resources, with the Clean Ohio Trails Fund Program. They are bringing over $500,000 to make this project happen. So we look forward to completing this in the coming year. Recommended action falls in the bottom mid portion of page 22.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Nelson.
Nelson, as David had shown, Solon to Chagrin Falls Trail Partnership, Project Development Agreement and Lease and Management Agreement. This is something we've been working on for a few years now. We ultimately did come to a very positive opportunity to partner with the city of Solon and really make this connection through the former Wheeling and Lake Erie Railroad. This is a great opportunity to connect more residents. We've actually gotten interest from some of the businesses, the private businesses, to actually make connections to this project as well. The board has seen this a number of times, so this is actually bringing forward the actual project development agreement. The city of Solon is paying for this, but we are helping use our expertise for the project development agreement, lease and management of this in the city of Solon.
Where do we think the bridge when?
You ask very good questions. we are in the process of looking at what the bridge can and will look like to go over the Chagrin River. I think there are a number of opportunities. I think cost is going to be one of the factors of how we look at it. It may be one of the stay cable bridges, right, Sean? That's what we talked about. You can come talk about it if you want.
Thanks, Brian. So yes, we are actually looking at performing a cable stayed bridge with our own crews, something that I know Jim Rodstrom is very excited to look at doing. We've done this at Fern Hill before. Now we just need to scale up, and we will start that process, the design of that process, probably middle of the end of next year. We're really looking forward to taking on the new challenge.
Sure, Sean, is a stayed cable is different than a suspension bridge, right?
It's the same thing.
The same thing. So you'll have two cables, not just one.
Correct. We'll have two cables. We'll likely have two towers, and then two terminations as well, one on each end.
And what is your how are you going to get the lowest? Is there one that we could buy that is almost completely developed? Like we've seen some further out on the east side that look really terrific. Or does this have to be more substantial?
We're probably going to design this from scratch and not go into a catalog for it because it is unique. And we've got a good partner in Osborne Engineering. Well, we also have between Jim and I, David Fry, our civil engineer, we think we can absolutely handle
this. Total length?
We're at about 250 feet. This is a wide floodplain. I don't know that we'll span that entire length.
Right.
But the river over time has meandered a bunch, but we have to account for that for decades.
So is that
caissons of something in some places?
They're potentially and very likely. In fact, the former railroad bridge that was there sat on piers and caissons, but it has been.
So you could use those?
Probably not. They're timber, and we don't really want to rely on something that's.
Yeah. Yeah.
again, this connects to one of our, you know, existing trail linkages. It provides a tremendous opportunity to connect this community further to the rest of our trail systems.
Well, one question, Sean. So what do you think the cost of the bridge itself? If it was a catalog bridge that you know had the caisson spacing already defined, and it happened to fit, what would the difference between a catalog bridge, if you will, and one that you designed specially? Wouldn't that be a substantial difference in cost?
Honestly, we really haven't seen a lot of per se catalog bridges in this suspension type.
Yeah.
Typically what we see with catalog bridges or pre-engineered bridges are prefabricated truss sections.
Okay.
This is not that.
So every suspension bridge is sort of a new deal. Would this be horse compatible?
That is one thing that we need to look at, because there's certainly a history of issues relative to horses on suspension bridges. And really the balance of the trail from River Road to the south is not equestrian, is not being constructed or designed for equestrians. The section north of River Road is, there are some stables in the area. It's likely not, but it's something that we're going to have to evaluate when we get to that stage.
Keep us posted. That's going to be very interesting.
Recommended action falls on the bottom page of 23.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
The next is the award of the RFP 6614B Manikiki Management Center Design Builder. This is a North Chagrin reservation. This facility has been identified as by far one of the worst that the Metro Parks currently has. It currently sits in the middle of the golf course. We are working on a new site location to the due north of the current parking lot. We shortlisted three firms, went through an interview process, and now have negotiated. We recommend to negotiate an award to Hummel Construction. Their most recent project was the carousel project here at the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. We believe this is the best value based on what they brought to the table to actually bring supplies and creative ideas to get the structure built over the next 6 to 8 months. Recommended action falls on the bottom portion of page 25.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is a Cleveland Foundry Joint Use Agreement, Cuyahoga River Heritage Experience. The Foundry has been a nonprofit affiliate of Metro Parks. They have most recently received $850,000 of capital appropriation from Senate Bill 310 in the 103rd General Assembly fiscal year 21-22. They need a partner, a public agency partner. We have done these types of projects with Bay Arts and Lake Erie Nature and Science Center over the last number of years. They are working to establish a heritage experience, and that includes a boardwalk along the Cuyahoga River, interpretive and immersive historical experiences relative to the history, sailing, and expanded and improved boat storage. The recommended action falls on the mid portion of page 26.
In a letter.
I'm going to abstain from this vote because of a relationship I have with the Foundry. So.
Okay. Move to approve. You have to second.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can second this because I'm dealing with Treble Cock a little bit too. But on a different issue. I mean, maybe I can't just.
Does it deal with the Foundry directly?
It deals with his company.
That's MCPC. This is a separate nonprofit affiliate of.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
The Foundry
I second it then.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Very good. The next is the ratification of the collective bargaining agreement with the Teamsters Local 507. We have negotiated out successfully two collective bargaining agreements that have been negotiated. First is a 1-year contract extension. These are very similar to the FOP and the CMEA. The terms are identical to that. The commissioners have seen the 03525 and a wage reopener contingent on the levy passage. Everything else stays exactly the same. This is on the recommended action falls on the mid portion of page 27. I'd like to thank Harold, Dr. Chris Kuhar, and the entire team that helped negotiate out, and Carl Picaro for bringing this to a closure at the year's end.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the increase for long-term disability insurance. Harold, I'll have you just give a quick conversation on that.
Good morning.
So this is related to the fact that salaries has gone up over the years. So everything is based on a percentage. The insurance is based on a percentage of salaries. So for many years, it was below 50,000. So we didn't have to bring it to a formal vote of the board. But now, because salaries have risen over the years, that number or that percentage of the salary has gone up over 50, is slightly over 50. So you'll see this from year to year.
Okay, move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The last, the next one is the appointment of Gary Butzbach as the interim chief financial officer and designee in the absence of the interim chief financial officer. We do need two signators besides myself and Joe Rozak to make sure that we can continue to conduct business. This is part of our financial requirement. Gary is here. He has been identified as the interim CFO designee. And then we have also designated Director of Business Systems Barbara Meyer to serve in the place of the interim CFO if needed. Recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 28.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
I'd like to thank Gary for stepping forward as an entire team. He's got a great plan moving forward. So let's give Gary a round of applause. We will move into the tabulation of award and bids. The recommended action falls in the top portion of page 29. We are actually pulling item number D, bid 6628. This is the Valley Parkway Crossing rebid in Brecksville Reservation. We were just most recently notified that ODOT wants to do one more final review of it. Therefore, it would be premature to bring to the board at this point in time. So we will bring it back after the first part of the year. We also have the dredging for the marina, emerald necklace in a 5-year contract, non-native plants, paid media advertising, concrete and leasing management services as part of this.
Can I ask one question on the dredging? Does that show up in the math of the marina itself, or is that considered more general?
It's more general because that's actually a boat launch that comes out of there as well. So it's part of the navigational channel to keep it open.
Okay, I gotcha. Thank you.
Recommended action falls on the page on page 29.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Vouchers and payroll.
The following vouchers totaling $11,558,065.71 have been reviewed as to legality of expenditure and conformity with the Ohio Revised Code. The recommended action to approve falls on the bottom of page 44.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And secondly, the vouchers totaling $537.85 specific to Arborware have been reviewed as to legality of expenditure and conformity with the ORC, and the recommended action for this approval, it falls on the bottom of page 45.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And Dan Moore has abstained from that vote, just for the record.
We have two public comments.
Yes, public comments.
Good morning, Laura.
Hi, Chair. So I just wanted to say as 2021 closes, I'm reflective and thankful during this pandemic year for the Metro Parks all-purpose trails. Thankful now that I am retired that I can walk or bike from my home in the Brooklyn Center National Heritage Area on the all-purpose trail in Brookside Park to swim at Estabrook and at the City of Brooklyn Pool. Also, I do take the new Brighton, the all-purpose trail in the Brighton Park to connect with Treadway Creek. Mostly that's how I get out of the valley. But sometimes I take a shortcut to get to the towpath by cruising through South Hills neighborhood to Shap. Then I fly down Granger to connect to the towpath. That's something down the line that I would hope there would be something NOAACA will identify Granger as a possible way to connect to the towpath. I'm thankful for Lenny Stover and his work with Rotary that primed the Red Line Greenway all-purpose trail. The best application of NOAACA's CMAC funds and the gift that keeps on giving. Although not planned as such, the new all-purpose trail that runs along the Opportunity Corridor allows car-free travel that connects the east side, west side of Cleveland. Sorry. And especially thankful for the grant writers at the Cleveland Metro Parks successfully awarded federal right raised dollars to continue trail expansion on the east side after the initial Tiger Grant, which funded the Red Line Greenway and the Lake League Trail connections on the west side of Cleveland. And just to note, from Brooklyn Center, you can ride over Harvard to the All-Purpose Trail on East 49th, and now I can connect to the Opportunity Trail at the East 55th Rapid Station. I can ride, it takes me 20 minutes from 55th to get to University Circle, and then I take the Red Line home, the RTA Red Line, the train to West 25th, take the rest of the Red Line to, I ride the Red Line, the All-Purpose Trail to West 41st, and 41st connects to Brooklyn Center, then just riding itself.
We should get you a GoPro.
Sorry?
So we should get you a GoPro.
I know, John Piana at the Cleveland.com does a great job, but I know there is a community group, the Roberto Clemente Park group, that wants to see greater trail access or signage, at least to let people know where Roberto Clemente Park is, because it is off of West 41st, and then you can connect. I actually ride through the Cemetery of St. Mary's to 38th, but the Destination Cleveland actually has a promotion for Roberto Clemente Park and some of the other amenities in the Hispanic areas of Clarkville. And then finally, I'm thankful for the amazing Metro Parks field crews who maintain all the all-purpose trails, and thankful in advance, although this doesn't happen right now, for future snow removal on the Brighton, Brooklyn, and Fulton bridges that span the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo and Brookside Park, and provide all-purpose trail loops for residents. There are ongoing focus sessions with residents right now, and with the Metro Health Institute of Hope, hoping that that grant builds further appreciation for the mental and physical health possible through the Cleveland Metro Parks. Thanks.
Thanks, Laura.
Thank you. Marty.
Good morning.
Morning.
15 years prior to this administration, I attended Metro Parks asking questions and raising issues on felt behavior or actions warranted examination. Raised concerns about the behavior of past prior commissioners, about favorite contractors, planning, priorities. Topics that concern a public body are thus of concern to the public. Never before was I confronted, nor was my veracity challenged. It is unfortunate that you take exception to oversight, as it is a founding principle of this country. The Constitution ensures that the government is to be held accountable to the people, which differentiates us from banana republics and their ilk. Those who resent public criticism are certainly free to work in the private sector. Yes, I am the primary source of your public records requests. Sadly, I'm the sole person tracking Metro Parks on a regular basis. Previous administration had commissioners who raised far more questions, and participation of the audience was encouraged and addressed, leaving less for the public to wonder about. It's always encouraging when the public sector itself takes note. As commissioner, aren't you concerned with a police ID being issued to a private citizen contrary to ORC regs? Did everyone who needed access to police headquarters have a law enforcement ID to swipe? There's a lot to be concerned about, and it shouldn't fall entirely to a citizen gadfly to bring it to your attention. Apparently, having the interim police chief show up in my driveway was not the end of it. Can't call it an official act, as he wasn't sworn in yet, but inappropriate in any case. Shortly after I delivered my remarks here, calling that visit highly questionable, I was confronted during the meeting break by both the chief legal officer and the CEO. I was accused of impeding an investigation and failing to be transparent. Neither individual is a law enforcement officer tasked with investigation. adding to my discomfort, both individuals were far closer than the recommended social distance. The churn in Metro Parks Police Chief, I noted, is now hitting finance with a CFO departing after 4 years. Phil and interims proceeding and following his tenure add up to 5 CFOs and 10 years with another in the future. Meanwhile, in 2011, 10 years ago, end of year expenditures finished out at 59 million. Today's budget hits 173 million through the end of November, which seems to demand close consideration, particularly as the Hinkley Dam repair looms. Next thing we'll hear, the levy will come up 2 years early. Historically, it has always gone an additional year. This is not the business model one would hope for. You may attack the messenger, but I hope you will listen to the message.
Yeah, commissioners, I'd like to speak to Marty's comments. And I think it's interesting because whenever I talk about Marty's role, I always thank her when I'm talking to other employees, because she is a watchdog for us. And I welcome that, as any public institution should welcome oversight. And I'm going to put it on the record that I absolutely talked to her after the meeting, our last board meeting, because what she is saying is inaccurate once again. And the issue regarding the wallet that she continues to bring up is that this is a citizen, Marty, who had information regarding a stolen wallet when only our police department had that information. And so she had information related to a crime, and our chief of police tried to call her to ask her questions about this crime and whether she had any relevant facts. Marty does not pick up her phone, and I know this because I have to call her often. And whenever we call her regarding a public records request, we have to leave a message because she's recording every word that we say, and that's fine. But she doesn't pick up her phone, and so when Chief Stillman tried to call her, she did not pick up her phone, and so he couldn't ask her questions. So he did go out to her house to try to ask questions regarding this matter. We don't see that as inappropriate, and I think that she left us no other choices. So I take issue with the fact that she says we take exception to the oversight. I think this board, as well as all of staff, have been nothing but respectful to Marty. And I'm sorry if I stood closer than 6 feet, but I had my mask on. Her ability to take a fraction of a fact and continue to disparage this organization is something we've dealt with for many years, the 11 years that I've been here. And I'm going to take issue with her fact that when we asked her how she found out about a criminal matter, she said she did not remember. And yes, I do question that, because she is looking for facts, for us to share facts. And I asked her, you expect us to be transparent. We would expect you to be the same. However, she has not shown us the same courtesy. So we will continue to respond to Marty Lesher's public records requests, and that is fine. In fact, we're closing out a year of 2021 where we saw an increase of 66% in our public records requests. They're not all for Marty, but it's an administrative obligation that we do, and we do it efficiently. We've won the award from the state auditor's office. The 2 to 3 years the STARS program has been in place, and we continue to hit the highest level of the 4-star rating. So I believe that we have been engaging in appropriate activity. And since she has information, and that's the only reason why she was able to make her public records request about the stolen wallet, I wish she would share that information with us, but she has not been forthcoming.
Marty, I'd like to comment on the issue regarding the diligence of the current commissioner crew here. I've been on more than 20 boards, and so I'm well aware of what is a nitpicking board member, one that is really getting into the details without essentially taking over an executive role, and what you do when you're just determining policy and understanding that processes and procedures are running right. And I feel very confident that this board is doing what it's supposed to be doing. I mean, there are different skills here represented by the three of us, and it is a small, I shouldn't say a board, the commissioners. It's a small group, and I think we do do what we should be doing, and I think we've done a lot more than a lot of the commissioners that I've looked back on over the history of the group. I think the other other issue has to do with the size of the budget. Our role is to provide a service to our constituency, and the fact that a budget is small doesn't mean the commissioners are doing a good job or a bad job. It just means it's small. And I think the value that we've brought to the community in the Metro Park, and granted the budget's higher than it has been, you know, 10 years ago. But I think the services we're providing the community are sought after and are approved. And I think, you know, the fact that 75% of the people voted in favor of the Metro Park the last time, and we'll see the same thing coming up this time. And that's what we have to watch for. How many people approve of what we're doing? And would you add any comments to that?
No, all well stated. Thank you.
I'd like to add one regarding the budget. Number one, I'm actually proud of the fact of how much has been put back into the park district. And number two, Marty, that is a fractional comment to reiterate what was mentioned earlier. You're not addressing the additional resources that we also have over 10 years ago. Charges for services over $30 million, $26 million in grants, gifts, and donations, $56 million more coming through on the resource side for deployment into the parks. So it's not all about the spend. It's about the balance between what we have to spend and how we utilize it.
I mean, just the donations are just a phenomenal growth from what it was in the past.
Thank you so much. Ends our public comment portion. We are in the information briefing items. The one item we have is the 2021 year in review. Kelly, would you like to tee it up?
Good morning. So building off of what was 2020 record-breaking year, 104-year history of Cleveland Metro Parks, 2021 has definitely been a stellar year, bringing home again, under Brian's leadership, the gold medal, the highest honor in park and rec management. This is the fifth time in the history of the park district. All the amenities that we were able to open, the completion of the Tiger project with the Wendy Park Bridge, capitalizing that, launching the new Find Your Path campaign, a brand new mobile app. We've got over 35,000 active users and growing. And then finally, a lot of special events. And again, being a place for the community to continue to come in these challenging times with what we're facing. Without further ado, this is something we've been doing for the past several years. We want to look back at a video and share the year that was. Thank you.
God.
Again, thanking the staff, the commissioners, and the entire community for the wonderful and tremendous support that the Park District has received. And now our 104th year, we look forward to a really, you know, next steps in our 105th year in 2022. So thank you so much for a great year. That does end the last business meeting of the Metro Parks in 2021. There is no old business. The next meeting date is Thursday, January 20th in the Receptor Room here. We do have an executive session. Rose?
Yes, and the meeting continues into executive session. And is there a motion to go into executive session for the reason of purchasing or acquiring real estate? That was easy.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Roll call?
Dan Moore?
Yes.
Debbie Berry?
Yes.
Bruce Rinker?
Yes. It's tradition.
Some things don't change. All in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned.
So aye.